Hello and welcome to the We Are Birmingham podcast. I'm Chris Golding.
I'm Matthew Elliott.
And as ever, we're joined by the vegan. Hi, Dave.
Hi, guys. You're right.
All good. Thank you. Now, I think before we get into anything, I think the place that we need to start is the shitty news, to be honest with you, about Tony Mowbray that a lot of Blues fans woke up to this morning. And the club have put out an announcement that he's suffering a medical issue that was discovered at the league's health review
check. Yeah.
Yeah. And that there's something that obviously urgently needs attending to, and that he's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. I think we should probably read the tweet out, to be honest with you. Then I think that probably makes more sense to do, rather than trying to portray ourselves and getting it wrong, which we'll come on to later on. So Blues put out a tweet that said, Birmingham City can confirm that manager Tony Mowbray requires medical treatment, which means he will be temporarily stepping away from the on-site management of the club for a period of approximately 6 to 8 weeks. There's then an announcement that goes with it on the website, where Tony himself has put in a message. Following my recent LMA health assessment, I've received a medical diagnosis that will require me to receive treatment. Undergoing treatment will necessitate that I temporarily step away from the technical area as manager of Birmingham City Football Club. Until I return, my assistant manager, Mark Venus, will take temporary charge of the team, supported by coaches Ashley Cole, Pete Shuttleworth and Mike Taylor. I'll continue to provide advice and counsel while undergoing treatment. The club has been incredibly supportive of me and my family, and we are very grateful. I know that everyone will be respectful of our privacy at this time. That was followed by a message from Gary Cook as well, but I don't think we need to go into that. That sort of covers most of it. I mean, the first things first, his health is paramount.
And absolutely.
Take it, however long it needs to take it. No speculation. They've asked for privacy. Give it them. Again, we'll come on to that later on. But I mean, it's just from seeing the game on Saturday and the massive highs to then that today, it's gutting. And it's gutting as a fan to have that happen. It's shit to have that happen to someone. I imagine for him, it's very shit. Him and his family, it's very shit on a different level.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, health absolutely has to come first. What I will say is he's pretty much won every single fan, the majority, 99% of our fans over since he's come in. With his personality, character, his attitude, just the general way that he communicates with the press, the message he gives to the fans, the way he talks to staff on Blues TV, and obviously what he's doing with the players on the pitch and the way he's transformed the way these guys are playing in such a short amount of time. Certainly some of the football I've seen over the past few weeks is up there with some of the best football I've ever seen a Birmingham City team play, or certainly the prettiest, maybe not always effective, but we're getting to that point. So it was a bit of a shock. Couldn't believe it when I think I was a little bit late to it, because I think you guys had messaged me and I there's messages in a number of chats, and I was a little bit late to it. So I was a little bit taken aback by it. And
I didn't believe it at first.
Did you have to double check it was a correct account or something?
Someone sent a screenshot into a Blues group, a Blues WhatsApp group that I'm in, and I saw the screenshot and I was just like, is that real? And then went on to BCFC Twitter and yeah, it was real. And gut punching.
It really is. And actually, you try to take out your personal disappointment from it, because obviously it's so much bigger than football, that this is about his health and the family. But it is you can't help not be disappointed and a little bit downbeat by it. Although not too downbeat, which again we'll get into too shortly, but 6 to 8 weeks would probably take us towards the end of the season, and I'd probably just prepare ourselves maybe for not seeing him this season, or that I guess he could make a return against like Norwich or something. It's just the last home game of the season, just to whatever. But I hope he, you know, whatever the procedure is, or whatever he has to go through, that he comes out the other side. And the fact that they're just saying 6 to 8 weeks would suggest that we are going to see him again and everything's going to be okay. But, you know, he's a 60-year-old man who has got a very loving family that probably just wants that everything's done on hit that side of things, they'll obviously want to look after him. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a shock. Still trying to process it a little bit, I think.
I know exactly what you're saying from being an older guy, and is it worth it anymore? Personally, I wouldn't blame him if it went by a few weeks and he went, I'm going to have to the end of the season, make my mind up. And if he then decided that he was going to spend time with his family, yeah, it's completely understandable, because you only get one life, don't you? And it might be be seen as a wake up call, I suppose, to, you know, that you don't need to work, so enjoy your time while you're here. But obviously we'd be gutted. You've just mentioned that it's gutting already as a football fan to see the progression that we've made, and to then you're essentially losing him. We're not. He's still going to be involved and around. Well, not around, but he's
video calls, providing teams advice, calls for council, yeah. For, and I'm sure that you know, Mark Venus and Shuttleworth will be up there seeing him. Will be going to see him and talk to him and stuff like that. And there'll be a lot. I guess there'll be a lot of discussion between them. So as long as he's not overexerting, I'm guessing. But the 6 to 8 week thing just gives you hope that everything should be okay. They put that time frame on it, back on the grass in six to eight weeks. Would it have only been a couple of weeks away if it was Eustace? I don't know. But not making a joke of it, but I'm trying to add a little bit of humour there. One thing I will say, because I saw a lot of people saying that they're quite worried now with Tony Mowbray having to step away, his number two, Mark Venus, obviously they've known each other for 27, 28 years or something ridiculously long like that. They've partnered in various different roles for 20 years. If anybody can pick up where Mowbray's left off, it's going to be Mark Venus. So I think we're probably in fairly safe hands from that point of view. I don't see, it was obviously be a man management, arm around the shoulder kind of thing, I think that the players may miss. But in terms of what they're doing day in, day out, I don't think it's going to change too much.
You've mentioned that about the man management side of things as well. Ultimately now, if anything, that might actually spur them on a little bit. Go out there and perform for him. Like,
you took the next thing away from me. Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's what I was going to say as well.
Do it for
yeah.
him. If you want to, if you enjoy playing for him, you love what's going on at the club, you love the guy, as everyone seems to, go out and make him proud of you while he's not around. Do it. And it's almost like your mum and dad going away when you're 15. You got the house to yourself. Don't have a party. Look after the house. I had parties.
not the best analogy.
Not shocked. You're touching on the players there. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it's a good time for, I mean, there is a togetherness in that squad at the moment, which I think we can get onto in a bit as well, that I think I've noticed more of, certainly since he's come in, and, you know, he is the driver behind that. Just looking on Instagram this afternoon, there was Stansfield, Dizelle, Sanderson, Laird, Efridge, Ruddy, JJ, Peck, I think Pacuna, and even Bradley Mayo at all had some form of tribute to him via their Instagram, on like an Instagram story, like blue and white hearts and stuff like that. So it's obvious that, you know, he means something to those guys as well. I'm sure there's probably others that haven't seen or that have maybe missed.
And that's just the guys that he's working with now.
Yeah, and then some of them obviously don't have Instagram, so I don't know.
But then look at the wider world of football, and there's so Sunderland have got it was an 8-page thread on one of their forums earlier with everyone just leaving lovely messages for him. That's probably a good point, actually. So we've scrapped 15-second opinions for this week. We've asked you, the listeners, our social channels, to send in some voice messages that we're going to send on to Tony Mowbray. We're going to send them to the club, and hopefully that gets passed on. Fairly confident that we can get that through. We're going to collect these for the next few days as well. So if you haven't sent one in and you want to,
Keep sending them in.
We'll collate them all. We'll send a nice sort of audio book, I suppose, of messages from fans, and we'll get that sent on. So let's hear some.
Get better soon, Tony. Not just a great manager, but a great man too. Everyone's behind you. Keep right on.
Get well soon, Gaffer. The whole fan base is right behind you, wishing you a speedy recovery. The lads are going to do you proud while you're resting up. Keep right on.
Hi, Gaffer. Sorry to hear about what's going on at the moment. I'm wishing you a full and speedy recovery. I just wanted to say thank you for bringing the good times back to Blues and putting a smile back on everyone's face this season. Hoping to see you back in the dugout in no time at all to carry on the fantastic work that you and the team have been doing. All the best and keep right on.
Wayne Bluenose here from Water Orton. Just want to say to Tony for beginning the process of giving us our team back. Just want to say, stay strong, Gaffer. You get yourself well soon. Health is the thing that comes first. But let's make sure we get you back bigger and better than ever. Keep right on.
Nothing seems more fitting than keep right on. And we look forward to seeing you back in the dugout soon, Tom.
This is a get well soon message from over in the USA for our gaffer, Tony Mowbray. Tony, get well soon. Our thoughts are with you and your loved ones during this time. Get well, feel better, and hope to see you back in the dugout real soon. All right, all the best. Keep right on.
I mean, summed up perfectly there. Keep right on. As you go through life, it's a long, long road. There's joys and sorrows too, and a hell of a lot of obstacles that get thrown your way. And I think that's the perfect way to summarise it. That's just a handful that people have sent in, a selection of them. We're going to be collating more. Any that are sent in, we'll send them over to the club, and hopefully we can get them to Tony for you.
They pretty much, everyone nailed it, didn't they? About bringing the pride back, smiles on faces, being a top man as well as being a top manager. Some really nice messages there. And there's a few on Instagram and Facebook that have come by the way of just standard messages as well that we'll hopefully try and get converted into voice notes from the same people that sent them.
Yeah, if you have sent a message in terms of a text, please try and click on the link and send one through as a voice note through to our WhatsApp. We'll get that included as well. I think we should probably sort of leave it there for that section now. I mean, we could probably talk for an hour about him and how shit
it is. Plenty of time to talk about that when he comes back. So shall we move on to...
Do you know what? I think we should move straight on to... Because it's related.
Aye, aye, aye. Send him to Cornea.
Shall I go with this one, or do you want
you fire away.
So, I have defended him in the past.
As have I.
We've had him on the podcast. We know that he can be a deeply passionate and emotional person. But I can't defend him anymore. So Neil Moxley, for your itchy trigger finger to get the story out as quick as possible this morning around Tony's illness and to bracket it with serious illness, which, you know...
Headline,
yeah. Which the club and Tony had obviously, you know, they asked for privacy. Specifically, Now, okay, you may not have given anything away, but you did mention Sirius. You've also gone on to say that he could be replaced by, you know, interim managers, despite the fact the club had already said that things will be taken on by Mark Beanis and the rest of the coaching staff. I just thought it was in purely bad taste. It lacked empathy. I was, you know, with no thought or fear that it just felt like it was pushed out as quickly as possible, the clicks, without any thought or feeling around his family at all.
Look, can I just quickly say, I don't think there's an issue about putting things out as quickly as possible. It's about getting things right, though.
You can put things out, be
right and get things out possible. Don't do it the way he did. There's nothing wrong with the speed at which stuff went out. It was the way which he did it, and that's what deserves a criticism.
Yeah.
I agree.
You're right. And then to come back.
Double down, almost.
It was kind of like backed down, but then doubled down in the same tweet to say that he had removed a bit about the interim managers because it triggered a few people. Not because it was in bad taste or was put out without any thought or feeling around the manager himself, like Tony himself and his family. For me, this time, you know, I know you've sent him to, I think you've sent him to Cornea before, haven't you? From memory, or at least you've wanted to.
Yeah, I think I did.
Knowing him as I have done over the last few years, I've always defended him, but there's no defending him this time. I'm sorry, Neil, but you are off to Cornea.
He deserves it. I know I'd normally play the jingle there, but I'm going to have a little sound it as well. I think the lack of common courtesy, I suppose, respect
and empathy. Yeah.
Empathy. Yeah. It literally was like, oh, it's very sad news, but click this link. Now I'm blocked on Twitter, so I've read it through the WAB account. You'd probably block that now if he's listening. Oh, well.
He won't be listening. He'll be listening to the Villa podcast.
But it was just like...
He is a Blues fan, though, apparently.
I know that he is, but everything that seems to happen, like, there's nothing there. I don't even think that he sent any well wishes in his posts.
He's painted an awful picture of himself over the past year. People point to the Fulham thing a few years ago, the last game of the season and whatnot, but it's just one step too far now. If for other people that step was months, year, whatever ago, for me it's just gone too far now. And yeah, if I was the club, I would be seriously considering how much access he is allowed going forward.
People have said that on Twitter and on different social media and on message boards as well. So on Small Leaf Alliance, I saw it. I can't disagree. It's like, surely they reserve the right to allow people in. I'm not sure that I'd be letting him in after that.
Anyway, I think that's probably enough airtime for him. He's had enough airtime today on social media. So
don't click on any links. Don't go and read the story. It's edited now anyway. So,
and it's got someone else's name on it as well.
Has it?
Yeah, it doesn't have his name on it anymore. It's got another chap's name, which I don't think was the case on the first time it was released. So yeah, it's a bit late for that.
While you're in Cornea, you might as well go and have a look for a holiday home that you can return to, because no doubt you'll be there again.
You can head down and go and see it's Inter Barcelona, can't he? With Dong. Strike up a relationship with him again.
If you enjoy our podcast, please don't forget to like, share and comment on social media.
And if the podcast platform allows it, please rate and review us.
Cheers, guys.
Okay, let's have a quick look back at the game at the weekend. I think it's a game which none of us predicted the score correctly, but I think it's a score that we're all happy with, yeah?
I'll take it. Oh, do you know what? I was gutted. And I know that sounds stupid with the result.
Because you didn't get it correct.
No. So as the players came out for the second half, in fact, maybe when we went behind, I put a bet on £5 on us to win 3-1. At half time, as the players came out, I put a second bet on £5 on Blues to win. And it was 17-2. When we equalised, I checked back at my phone to see if there was a cash out and what it had gone to, because Aidan Petey, who was stood next to me, had got a £20-odd cash out. The bet was still on my bet slip and hadn't actually gone in. Gutted.
Oh, gutted.
That would have been a nice 90 quid or something. Bit more than that, maybe. I don't know. I can't do the maths.
When you said 17-2, I thought that's ambitious. We've only scored like a couple of goals and about 70 shots.
Definitely wasn't the scoreline prediction.
It was a weird game because the first half, I mean, actually, what was the atmosphere like first and foremost? I know we're going to talk a little bit about the how we got to that point later on, but yeah, what was the atmosphere like in there? Because although you could see it was full on the TV, there was only pockets of times when you could hear like full voice, but it was a lot. I could hear a lot of Sunderland through my TV through a lot of that game, and it was quite disappointing considering we probably outnumbered them 25,000-2 or something.
I actually thought Sunderland were quite disappointing. But maybe that's because I'm the other side of the ground. There were songs that were sang in the railway that I didn't hear, that I was told about afterwards, because apparently they fans over there were singing "He left because you're shit." Vegan, were they?
Yeah, they were. Yeah. And I think, yeah, you know, there was quite a bit of noise coming from them. And I think, Matthew, I think you're right. It was great at times, and it was, you know, just as flat as normal at times. But it was great to see it full, or near enough full.
It was really, really, it was great to see a full stand. And it kind of, remember when I watched when you guys went to the Tom Brady game when he first came over against Leeds?
Leeds, yep.
And I felt quite gutted that I was missing out on just that atmosphere and like the whole vibe from it. And I kind of felt a bit like that on Saturday as well, when although it wasn't like a big game in the grand scheme of things, like the fact that it was like first time we'd sold out in X amount of years, and like just the general, I don't know, feel from like social media and like talking to you guys and stuff like that, I was almost had a bit of like FOMO from that as well. So yeah, you guys were there, so
for me, I wasn't drunk at this one. I was afterwards, but not before and not during. For me, I thought that the performance, when the performance, the atmosphere, I felt a buzz up until they scored. I thought there was like you sort of get that sense, and the whole build up beforehand, everyone was like, yes, come on, we're back, that vibe, and the buzz was there, and it to me, it felt like maybe the players were a little bit on edge because of it. And it was, I think I maybe messaged on Twitter and said, you know, it's like, is it if ever there was a typical Blues in front of a sellout completely bottling it performance, that felt like it was that for that in that first half.
I think you messaged me with it.
And it was just like, why? Second half completely different, and the scenes when it was the equaliser was the one, it just went off mental. It was absolutely crazy, and the footage from the safe standing behind the goal just looks mental. On like, I think safe standing's the place to go.
I think, cause, yeah, because you'd have been right. I mean, there was those like three or four shots pretty much right in front of you, wasn't there?
Yeah. Oh, well, I ended up half a row down. Like, our whole row sort of just congregated halfway across. It was just, it was incredible. But,
well, if I can get back, which I'm hoping to get to at least one more home game before the season's out, then...
Oh, yeah, because you're a shit fan. Don't go anymore, do you?
Yeah, live in a different country, so I'm absolutely a shit fan, yeah. So I can't go every weekend.
Part-timer.
When you do manage it, we'll try and ensure another 10,000 people come along for you as well.
Yeah. Well, just to add more pain for where I need to park. So I'll try and get in. It'd be nice to get into safe standing, actually. So, do you know what? Actually, before we go into the game, let's actually just talk about the incentive and the ticket thing.
I was just going to say, should we talk about that? Because we'd mentioned it beforehand. So
there's a lot of clamour online for us, people wanting the club to do this until the end of the season. Now, I don't know whether the club are permitted to do that, whether there's a loophole that they can do something similar. My concern would be that I don't think it would work for the majority of the season. I think the novelty would maybe wear off, and it's not just about the price of the tickets. But certainly, if there's something they can do to incentivize fans to come back, whether that's kids for free, kids for a quid, or, you know, the season ticket holders bring XYZ amount of people for £10, £5 each, whatever, then we should try and exploit that as much as possible. I don't think we'll see another, I don't think we'll see many more 27,500 crowds, but we should see an increase on what would had previously.
Yeah, I think we can. I think you're right. I don't think we're going to see, you know, we may get another occasional sellout, but I think there's still genuine aspirations to pushing it over the 20,000.
And the lack of Tony might be a driver for some people as well. Potentially, I don't know. You don't go there to watch Tony Mowbray on the sideline, obviously, but I think people may be a little bit
skeptical,
more reluctant to. Yeah. They might want to see how things go the next few weeks before they make a decision on that sort of stuff. But maybe, what do you guys think? Because I feel like the novelty might wear off.
I'm not sure. I think there's people that will have been there on Saturday, having not been there for ages, and you're right, might not come back for the rest of the season. But I think there's legitimately people that won't have been here since the regime change. And if we can encourage those people back... I know it's not all just about the ticket prices, because there's a million different factors that all play into it. But I think ultimately, if you offer those incentives, people, you know, it will encourage people to come back. We're not going to, you know, get 10,000 on each attendance now, but anything which brings more people back bit by bit. And I think that's what they need to look at it. It's a bit by bit thing, a gradual process, not just looking to replicate that every week.
So I know a guy... it's a guy that I got tickets for, and he hadn't been to a game since the European games, so 10 years or so, right?
13.
Well, yeah, 10 years or so.
So what was his motive for staying away?
Just, I think life, kids and everything got in the way, and then there was just no draw back to it. At that point, it's just been a bit of a shit show since then. The other guy that I got tickets for hadn't been regularly for a while. I think he'd been maybe last season to one game, and then maybe one the season before, just the occasional games. Now, we went out for a beer. They both brought their sons with them, went out for a beer beforehand, went to the game, went out for a beer afterwards, and went for a curry on the way back as well. And afterwards, they were both talking about the possibility of season tickets next season. That's how, like, I know it was one game, it was a sellout, it was the atmosphere was incredible when we won it, and you walk away like, whoa. And it's not like that every week. But if we can encourage those people back to, so next time, if there's another offer, I might not ask them. I'll ask someone else who hasn't been for a while. And then next time that someone else might get invited, and we try and spread the word a little bit, and it gets people that draw back. Now, I'm not thinking that this is going to be, so the tweet that I put out, Aidan Petey had mentioned it on Saturday. He said to me, did you leave the review thing about where you want to do with what you want to do with tickets and stuff? And he told me that he'd put in there, put the season ticket holder thing on for all games, for maybe for platinum and gold. And I thought, do you know what? That's a great idea for the rest of this season. And not that we're going to be selling out every game, because we won't. It was a real struggle. And free tickets and stuff were given away to community places and whatnot. It was a massive push to get it sold out. But if we could get, at the moment, it's 18, 19, 20,000. If we can get that to a regular 22, 23, 24,000 by doing some offers between now and the end of the season, we review the ticket prices next season, we get people back who haven't been for years that want season tickets next season. It's all preparation to build forward and to reach out and get lapsed fans back, get new fans interested. And I saw someone on Twitter that said that one of the kids who'd been from a football team who supported Villa has actually gone home and told his mum, I'm a Blues fan. And you know what, just get as many people into the Blues that we can. And I don't think it's a novelty that's going to wear off. I don't think it's going to be 27,000 every week, 28,000. But if we can get that up to the lower 20,000s, 21, 22 as a regular footing, and then review it next season, I think we'll be in a good place to go forward. I think that's progress.
Anything where we can get uplift. I mean, I didn't want it to come across as negative when I said that it novelty wear off, because ultimately when you start doing stuff like that, it becomes a norm. And I think people do kind of, I don't want to say lose interest, but it's just, I think it's not just the price of the tickets, it's the whole day. It's, you mentioned there, you had beers before, beers after, went for a curry. That's not even including anything you may have got in the ground, etc., stuff like that. So
I didn't, because I got to the, I saw the queues and I was like, no.
Yeah, well, that's another drawback, isn't it?
That was the only negative of their day, by the way, that they said that they queued for 20 minutes in the Kilmerick, got to the front and there was nothing left.
Well, I was going to ask, Chris, was there anything extra which they changed your end to try and facilitate all the, I mean, I think we all saw the piece that Dan Ivory wrote.
I didn't know, because what?
Because you didn't go for anything, so you don't see.
Do you know what? I got to the turnstiles in the tilt, and there were two of them still not working when they knew that it was a sellout, and that was frustrating with the queues. Not that the extra two would have made a difference, I suppose, but it's just like, surely you can get them open and up and running. I saw the queues for the bars, and I was just like, no, not even going to bother. I saw the queues at half time for the toilets, and then I held on until afterwards. And
you've got a stronger bladder than me, I tell you that for free.
I told you.
You see the fear in my face just for that. When he said that.
I told you I wasn't drunk at that point. I'd only had a couple of beers, but then
I have got a bladder of an 8-year-old child. Like,
you would have needed the branded BCFC catheter on that.
Yes, yeah.
The coach that we did to Bristol, I wouldn't have lasted on that one. Bristol, wasn't it?
No Pistol Bristol. Oh, yes, good size. But, so it's another thing to think about it with these incentives. Now, I know this won't be the case for all of them, but would you feel, or you're both season ticket holders, how do you feel about it? Does it bother you that if they did do something like this, the remaining seven games become significantly less, which means, you know, you've ended up paying more for your season ticket? And would it bother you? Would you want the club to reimbursement next season on the repeat season ticket holders? You wouldn't want any money off next year's or anything like that?
Get it as full as we possibly can.
There will be people that think like that, though. That is my...
There might be.
You know, and they have every right to, if
that,
you like that.
That Blackburn game on Tuesday night was dead. It was shit. And
no, I agree with you.
The celebration was great, but just seeing the ground half empty,
yeah,
it's not a good look. And I can't imagine that there's anyone, season ticket holders or pay on the day ticket holders, that sit there and think, I'd resent people getting cheaper tickets to come to these games and having an attendance anywhere close to what it was like on Saturday.
And that is one of the issues, I guess, of picking individual games to deliberately push. It can have an impact on others. So I'd rather see the rest of the season, incentives throughout the rest of it to kind of balance things out, rather than just to pick and choose games where you're then going to maybe negatively impact others.
I mean, the Sunderland game, I think, was done with the fact that it was Tony Mowbray's last club in mind. I think that's kind of why they did it. I mean, they might not admit that, but I think there was definitely some thinking there behind it, because they hoped it would create a bit more of an atmosphere, maybe. I'm just trying to look at, I don't necessarily agree with either side, but just looking at both sides, I think there will be season ticket holders out there that might be a little bit miffed that suddenly the next seven home games are going to be done for a fair bit cheaper. So,
but ultimately, you've got to look at the cost over the course of the season anyway. We're already getting the tickets are massively cheaper in the first place. So, ultimately, you do the maths and, you're probably still coming out cheaper than picking them up throughout
the course. And that's how others have got to look at it as well. But
maybe this is one that we should put out for a 15-second opinion for people to actually say how they'd feel about it, and we do that in future and put a topic on it, see what people do really feel. I think there's going to be I think there has been today a full review of the game and the incentives and everything, so I imagine that if there are going to be further incentives, that's going to get pushed out fairly soon. So we'll see.
So the game itself, then? Should we move on to that now?
Yeah, I think it's probably probably get onto it eventually, seeing as we normally start with that.
Koji, 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 Koji.
Do you know what? I didn't think he had his best game for us.
He didn't, but did you hear that's what the players were chanting in the dressing room afterwards? No, he didn't. He was good in the first half, I thought, and then weirdly he dropped off in the second half when the rest of the team kind of got better. But that's not the first time.
But I've done that. Reading that ball into the box and nipping in, pop it past the keeper, get the winner, happy days. I mean, there was an element of luck for both goals as well. With the
mate, we are the kings of scrappy goals. This weird, because like you've got some like decent build-up play beforehand, or like the quick thinking for the second goal, Bakuna.
Miyoshi missed for the first goal. Miyoshi missed the two opportunities as well.
Yeah,
the ball just bounces back.
But it doesn't matter how they go in. But we're getting the balls into the right places, and also, I said this to someone else the other day. How many players have we got in the box now?
Yep.
Like for absolutely years, we have not had that amount of people in the box when the ball comes in from a dangerous area. It's been
such
like,
high pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look at where Bielik was when he won the ball back.
Yes.
He's like 10, 15 yards into their half. I love that. We'll attack. Which was what Rooney was telling us that he was trying to instill about the first front foot football.
There's a lot. I saw that a few times on Saturday more from Bielik and Roberts. At one point, Roberts had closed them, pressed their centre backs from chasing a ball that came into centre field, and he went all the way to the edge of. It's actually just before Sunderland scored that this happened. He'd actually pressed their centre backs, and then obviously made his way back afterwards. But obviously, that's something that Tony wants him to try and do at times as well when the time is right. First half was a bit weird because we started off well, I thought. Buzzed the ball around a little bit, looked semi-dangerous, but then Sunderland just seemed to, I don't know, it almost felt like they had an extra man and they were overloading the midfield, and we looked a little bit like under pressure without being like completely outplayed. It was just kind of, we were just kind of stifled and it was frustrating.
So you've just mentioned Mark Roberts then. Let's talk about the goal.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I don't think that we looked under an awful lot of pressure. I thought they had the ball, but I was never massively concerned, like not to a concerning extent for me.
They'd created, I think Job had missed a fairly good chance that Mundle, I want to say Mundle, it might, I don't know if that's his name.
He had the
half chance.
And he had the opportunity after as well, didn't he?
The offside goal, which was miles offside.
But
they've created a few chances, and obviously Jack Clarke is quite, well, it's a very dangerous.
He's the most
dangerous player in the league, potentially.
So he doesn't need any help, does he?
Not
doesn't
usually,
need
no.
chances gifting him, does he? But let's gift him one. So let's.
It was frustrating because I know, I know you're firmly in the camp that it's 100% on Robbo, and I get that.
I'm not saying 100%, but I'm saying it's his fault more. If you're blaming someone, it's him, because if you're going to play football around the back, you're going to get caught out at times. You're not going to play the perfect pass every time.
They got caught out a few times at the back in this game in the first half. There was a few. We were just dispossessed by just sloppiness.
Yeah. But it's going to happen. You're going to play straight passes. You're going to not put enough pace on the ball. It's going to happen. What is unforgivable in that situation is, even though Mark Roberts has looked behind him, he's seen Jack Clarke, he's then looked back and hasn't switched on to the fact that this ball is coming over to him. And he's watching it. And John Ruddy told him afterwards as well, that you've got to move to the ball. You can't just, if you don't think you're going to get there, just move to it and just put your laces through it, stick it out for a throw the other side of the pitch. He didn't react. Even after Jack Clarke's running in on goal, he didn't react. He just watched it.
I think you're right. I think if there'd been any kind of concerted movement towards it, there would have been a bit more sympathy around, you know, the shortcomings of it. But you're right. It was just because he was ball watching and stationary.
He nodded off. I don't think it was the best pass either, but Paik only had, he was either going to go, he wasn't going to go to the left, he was only ever going to go to the right or backwards. So Jack Clarke had already anticipated that Paik was going to try and play Roberts in.
Roberts hasn't, and that's the issue. Roberts hasn't read the fact that he's going to get the ball.
But we
said last week that Mark Roberts is the weak link at the back. This is not his strength.
80% pass completion on Saturday, which was mad because it didn't feel like it.
How many passes did he make? Probably find out.
80%. He needs to be switched. I get where you're coming from. He needed to be switched on, Flack. He needs to expect the ball and be a little.
I'm not joining in the pylon on him. There are people who are slagging him off. And
from a defensive point of view, he was absolutely fine.
The fact that they scored, we conceded from us being sloppy. It was us trying to play football, and they basically high-pressed it and just said, no, we'll have that, thank you, from what we've said is our weaker player at the back. I'm not going to join a pylon against him. I put him at fault for it, I think. He'll watch it back. He'll probably put himself at fault for it. Ruddy clearly did at the time, but
you're not together because you've got the same haircut as him.
Is there? Are you being boldest now?
Probably, yeah.
Cancelled.
I absolutely get where you're coming from. I think it was still a little naive from Peck, but you know it. Look, the more I watch it now and think, why was Roberts just not switched on enough to be prepared to be closer, move towards the ball? Whether or not he didn't see Clark in his peripherals or what, I don't know.
But no, that's the other frustrating thing, watching it back. He actually looks around and sees where he is.
Maybe Clark was just so quick, he just like a little blur. Yeah. I don't know. But it was unfortunate, and it was a very, let's say it, it was a very typical Blues moment. But, you know, again, we said this would happen even with better players at the back. These mistakes are going to happen. We're still very much in the embryonic stages of what this process looks like. The fact that we're actually playing the football we are at this point in time, this soon into Mowry's tenure, I think is amazing anyway. So
correct.
We have to accept that these mistakes are going to happen. We said that at the start of the season when John Eustace was in charge and we were going to try and start playing better football. We said it when Rooney was in charge. We have to accept that this is going to happen as we move forward.
Oh, absolutely.
Now,
that's why I'm saying I'm not going to join the pile on and slag him off.
We've only got about 12 or 13 more games left of him because he ain't going to be coming back, is he? But he is going to be needed before the end of the season because Bielik's a yellow away from being suspended for a couple of games, and that's almost
not suspended as everyone thought.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of that, but obviously he'd had a red card previously and that doesn't count towards yellows, and there was a yellow in the FA Cup that doesn't count in the league booking. So he's got five more games left to not get a booking. I think we can safely say that's not going to happen. So we are probably going to see Mark Roberts again at some point. Thankfully, Sanderson's going to be back soon. We've got to say the fact that we went 1-0 down and, you know, the first half was a bit of a struggle. I thought we weren't at our best. We weren't at our best in the second half, but we were certainly a lot better. The actual mental strength and the work ethic and the will to dig in and kick on, especially after we scored that first, got the equaliser back as well. I think a lot of people have got on the backs of the players, and, you know, sometimes I think that was okay. Other times, I'm not so much, but it says a lot for the togetherness and the desire for this team that, you know, they really, really dug in to grind out a result. It wasn't all about quality. There were some moments of, you know, of some nice football, but let's be fair, it wasn't the prettiest performance we've seen. The fact that they just dug in and managed to get a result, I think, is massive. And back-to-back wins as well. It's huge. And you could see how much it meant to them.
Sorry, I was going to say, and one of the key things, again, was that they stuck at the task.
Yes.
They didn't revert to changing anything. It was just, right, we know what we're doing. We know what the job is. We know. Let's just do it. And they did it.
And it was a lot of quick thinking. There's some nice set pieces as well. One of these set pieces has got to come off at some point. I know Ashley Cole's been working on it with them. I think it helps that Dizel and Peck both have very, very good take very good corners and free kicks. You've obviously got Bakuna who can take a good free kick. We've got to score from one of these corners at some point, I think. Certainly the ones, the in-swingers that just put in some of the goalkeepers under pressure. We're going to create more chances from those. Andre Dizel, again, first half, I thought he got a little bit, whilst his pass completion was good, I thought he got a little bit bullied, a little bit overawed. But second half, I think probably best player in our team, potentially best player across the two sides, I thought, in that second half. That is not the player that the QPR fans were talking about, the player that we said last week that Clive had spoken about. Different environment. He's in an environment where I think he can thrive now, and he's got, maybe we'll say, he's got better players around him potentially. That's no disrespect to QPR. He's obviously loving his football at the moment, which I think, obviously, as we know, makes a massive, massive difference to a player. Clive did say, I'll repeat, he's a very, very talented player, and that's what frustrated him the most, because he never showed it when he was at QPR. But, you know, probably a lot to do with the environment. If we continue to see him play in this vein,
Like, we've got a real player on our hands, and I understand that we do have something in place where we can take him on permanently at the end of the season as well. So I'm quite, what's the word? I'm feeling quite intrigued, positive around what can do for us going forward.
My one concern on that, and it's not really a concern, it's a worry maybe, is that, are we seeing that player now because there's the opportunity to get a move?
To get and a contract, you moves.
I don't want to look at that. I want to look at the player that we've got that's playing for us now, and that I want that player. And I want to think that, okay, if it's Tony Mowbray taking him forward as a player, that he can get the best out of him, regardless of whether he's on a loan or whether he signs permanently. Are we leaving a gap there for the Badger?
I think we should. Oh, is
it? Answer the phone.
There we go, Badger. Sorry, just had to do that for you. Continuing with Andre Dizel, one thing that I'm not sure how many people realise. I know he's played for England under a number of different age groups, but he's actually eligible to play for America as well. So, and I would think based on current form, it might be a chance that he ends up playing. He could get a call up for America at some point. That'll be another feather in
the American Blue Nose.
American Blue Nose cap, if you will. So, yeah, well, I mean, we'll probably round up what we thought of the performance, because for me, it wasn't the greatest, but, you know, we did what we had to do, which, you know, is a sign of a good team as well, or certainly a sign of an improving team. Now, that Sunderland team have a lot of very good players, but they were also fairly disappointing in that second half, and they looked like a team that potentially weren't really playing for their manager. And based on today's...
you talk about their manager. Was it Hume?
Trevane, Hume. Yeah, the lack of handshake. Now, I saw that on TV at the time.
I thought he played all right.
Now, this is the thing, right? So I still don't know, because when I saw it on TV, the commentator mentioned it, so that he didn't shake his hand. But it, for me, at that time, it didn't look like Beale had even seen it. It's a bit like Mark Roberts and Jack Clark.
He said he hadn't seen him.
Oh, did he say that, did he?
He said he hadn't seen him.
Oh, right, okay. So
I think he saw him.
I don't know, because I don't... It's hard. Like, why would you not? Like, it's a very strange...
Has he got people blinkers on? And he's not. Like, you can see stuff that's happening there. If someone's coming out to give you a high five, you can see it. And he actually stepped away from it. That was the funny thing.
Honestly, I didn't notice that, because I was just...
Yeah, he like shuffled his feet.
Because the commentator mentioned that he offered out to shake his hand, and Beale didn't reciprocate. But when I looked at it, I've not seen a replay since, but... Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one. Obviously, the Sunderland fans really disliked him, and they obviously... He's gone now, anyway. So they've got Mike Dodds coming in now, who we all know. So I think the Sunderland fans are moderately happy about that. Couldn't care less myself now, to be fair.
So that Speakman's under a bit of pressure.
Well, he's been under pressure for a little while, hasn't he? You've got to question... I know this isn't a Sunderland podcast, but you've got to question... If a manager is being sacked after 8 weeks, 8 weeks, is that right?
12 games?
Is the problem, does the problem lie with him? Obviously it does a little bit. Or does it lie with the people that employed him in the boardroom or the director of football? We quite rightly pointed the finger at Gary Cook when Rooney was taken on. It's a similar sort of thing. Speakman got rid of Mowbray. Face didn't really fit. Speakman wants to bring his own person in, brought Beale in. It hasn't worked. And it's just, I think, the pressure is on him now. You could see him go at some point in the future.
Final word on the Sunderland game then for this week. I've just sent you the clip of Beale and Hume. Oh, have a quick look.
Oh, there was a slight step to the right. Yeah, I didn't really notice that. Slide to the right.
Oh, I think that's done 100%.
I hadn't noticed that. It's quite subtle.
Yeah, I suppose. But who scored actually gave him man of the match as well, which is quite funny. Anyway, back onto Blues. The game itself, we had 16 shots. We had, was it something like 12 on? No, 5 on target, not 12 on target. We actually, like the Stansfield one in the first half, I'm not sure if that was on target. I think it might have been hitting the bar.
It's still, the strike was unreal.
Incredible strike. I actually thought that he'd scored in the second half when JJ scored as well, because that melee of bodies, that ball just bouncing around Miyoshi twice and it just going back to him and then to Stansfield, who I thought it was.
It's a great initial shot by, I think, Tyler Roberts, wasn't it?
It was, and the turn to get into the box as well.
He's very good again, I thought, in terms of just build-up approach play. Very, very good feet, as I mentioned at the weekend, but not in a sex way. I know why Dave is laughing, but he's a good feet for a footballer.
Have you got a foot fetish? Is that why?
It's neither here nor there. This is a football podcast, not a foot fetish podcast. Let's move on. I thought he was very, very good build-up play. That little bit of indecision in the final third, decision-making isn't great sometimes, but actually, like, some of a lot of the good things we did came through him a fair bit. So you can, as you said last week, as he's getting fitter, you can see him being more and more involved. And I was quite impressed with him again. Yeah.
Okay, on to Ipswich at the weekend, 2-2 earlier in the season. What do we think, chaps?
It's going to be a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just want them to do it for Big Tone.
You feel like there'll be an extra impetus to... Is that the right word?
I had a daughter just like 18 months ago. Not impotent.
Very good. I wondered where you were going with that one. They're obviously a very good team, aren't they? We played them earlier in the season, and that was probably the most enjoyable 45 minutes of Rooney's tenure, that first half against them. But, you know, they came back and probably deserved the point in the end. But, I mean, they've been just on a roll since they got promoted from League One. They play exceptionally good football. You know, wow, they're like top three or four, aren't they? I think they were second for a long time. They dropped off a little bit, but it looks like they're picking up results again now. They're 1-2 on away. It's 1-2 at the weekend, 4-0. Away at Millwall the week before. Millwall, by the way, who look absolutely bang in trouble at the moment.
Yeah, Gary Rowett, your football's shite. And please come back because we're really in shit now. Ipswich are fourth at the moment. Sorry, just to put in there. Yep, Millwall are looking in free fall. And
they really do. So... It's a very, very tough game, but they're all tough, aren't they, really, now, between now and the end of the season. There isn't really...
No easy games.
No, I think we've got Millwall, which, you know, and so Millwall and Rotherham, I think the two that you look to make sure you get maximum points from. I can't see us winning this one, but I can see the players putting in a good performance for Tony. I think there'll be a big...
emphasis on that.
So I'm gonna go for a score draw again against them.
Vegan?
I'd like to think that we've seen enough sort of positivity in the way that we're playing in the last couple of games to at least think we can go out there and try and get something. Again, maybe score draw.
You've got to put an actual score
on it. Okay. 2-2.
Chewy?
1-1.
Now, I think I'm getting a bit carried away. Not 4-0 carried away. Just, I've seen, so.
You've seen the lights.
Since that Sheffield Wednesday game, and that the other night going behind, or the other day going behind, and that the fight back from the Blues players, the desire to want to get the win, and then the togetherness at the end, at the end of both games, to be fair, because the Blackburn game was the same. And now with what's happened today, I think there's going to be a little bit of extra fight in them. And I'm going to go 2-1, 2-1 Blues.
So you're saying the trick is actually going behind first deliberately?
No, I think we might go, it might be like we go 1-0 up, maybe even 2-0 up, and then it gets a bit squeaky by the time.
Our waveform is just not great, is it? That's my only concern.
It's not.
Against a very good team.
And I get that. And maybe I am just getting carried away. And just, I don't know. But no, something's telling me. So I'm going to go 2-1. 2-1 Blues. And I think we might be hanging on a little bit at the end.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably going to be the case for a lot of the game. Maybe. I don't know.
No, well, we said eventually someone's going to get this spanking, and I still believe that they are. And it's not, I don't think he's coming in the next three games by any means. But, you know, when we've got Millwall coming up in a few weeks, QPR, there's Rotherham, as you said, in there, Coventry.
It'd be nice to give them a dicking, wouldn't it?
It would. But I still think it's coming. I still think it's coming. And I think that. Selection wise, I don't know. I think there's probably a few decisions to make in there now. I think Sanderson wasn't in the squad on Saturday. I think if he's fit for this week, which we assume that he will be, I think he comes straight in
behind him for Roberts.
For Roberts,
did it put sign Kiefer Moore? They did, didn't they?
They did.
See, I would probably still play Mark Roberts, and the whole probably worth mentioning. On that note, that Kevin Long is probably looks like he's on his way out to Toronto, MLS. So that's one. That's another player you would probably consider of maybe playing, putting in against Kiefer Moore. Looks like he's being allowed to go on a free transfer to the MLS, which is fair enough because we've got Sanderson, Bielik, Ivu, and Roberts, and then. Forgotten his name, Buchanan and Rami that can play there at pinch as well. So, understand the club letting him go. I think there's a few people that were a little bit shocked by it, but at the end of the day,
when you drop struggling. Down to the sort of third, fourth, whatever in line, it's probably best for the player to make that move while it's available. Don't stand in his way, and you get the wages off the books, which. Every little's going to help for the summer.
Yeah.
The project. But I still think you bring Sanderson in, even with...
Yeah, I'm just not sure. The Kiefer Moore thing is in the back of my head. I don't think we've got... Neither Sanderson or Bielik is
physical enough and dominant in the air enough that, I mean, Keith Moore's actually quite good with his feet as well, but I'd just be concerned because we're not a very big team and I think we would struggle. And I'm no advocate of Mark Roberts, but he will have his uses, certainly against someone like him.
I know exactly what you're saying. I don't know where you're coming from. But I don't.
Alternatively, you just played, you start Duke at up front and bring him back for the corners.
Well, as we've said multiple times, as much as we love Duke, yeah, probably time to move on.
So, yeah, I'm going 1-1. Dave's going 2-2. You're going 2-1, yeah?
2-1 Blues, yeah. 2-1 Blues. Right, let's leave it there. Anyone travelling to Ipswich, Portman Road, good old jaunt. Have a safe journey there and back, of course. Tony Mowbray, thoughts are with you. Get well soon, Gaffer.
Get well soon, Tony.
And until next time, keep right on.
Keep right on.
Keep right on.